her fashion was very much a part of her activism, you know, and I don't think people know that is that it was offensive at that time for her to be a Black woman wearing a fur coat, wearing diamond earrings. So, you know, it was a part of that that was just fun and just enjoyable and dropped me into her character. And then it was a part of that was almost like armor. That's her fight.
Hello and welcome to the Awardist from Entertainment Weekly, taking you inside this year's top contenders for the Oscars and more of the industry's biggest awards. I'm David Canfield, EW's movies editor, joined as always by my co-host Clarissa Cruz, EW's executive editor. Hello, Clarissa.
Hello, David.
We are up early to discuss last night's very weird, potentially revealing virtual Golden Globes. From the many surprise wins to the few that only cemented this season's Oscar frontrunners. To break down all the shock and awe and to sift through what it all means for the Oscars, we welcome back our awards expert, Joey Nolfi. Hello, Joey.
Hello to both of you. I'm looking forward to another day of speaking justice to the things that matter, like the absence of Penguin Bloom
in no,
this year's Golden Globes.
I left that out of this week's outline. Crap. And later, a special and timely guest, Andra Day, joins me on the show, fresh off her shocking, very exciting Golden Globe triumph. To discuss her brilliant performance in The United States versus Billie Holiday. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And let's start there. Guys, Andra Day for Best Actress, anyone?
Oof. I mean, while Andra definitely built goodwill with industry voters right before nominations voting, I think she gets a huge visibility boost here. I'm not convinced that she has overtaken Carey Mulligan just yet. I think she definitely is at number two. She definitely vaults over Frances. I mean, Frances, I don't think, is winning anything. So I think she goes from, like, peripheral contender to legitimate threat. But I still think measuring anything with the Globes outside of the lens of she gets a visibility boost with a really emotional acceptance speech is misguided, shall we say, just because the Globes is such a vacuum of voters that have absolutely nothing to do with Hollywood in any way.
Fair.
That's so interesting. I wonder, and this just came out, so I actually haven't seen it. But you saw it, right, David? You saw Andra's performance. I mean, tell us what you think voters responded to in it. I know there was so much preparation that went into her turning into Billie Holiday, and I'm sure she talks about this in your interview. But can you tell us maybe what resonated here?
Sure. She goes way into it, into our conversation, and including lots of prep that you might not expect. But I, you know, when I first saw this movie, I think it was a couple months. Oh, no, you know what? It was right around New Year's Day, right after Hulu acquired it. And I think I told Joey when I saw it, I think she can win. And of course, I think I said that to you as well. It was just sort of a gut reaction. I agree with Joey. I'm not predicting her to win the eventual Oscar right now. But it is a performance that you just respond really strongly to. It's not only this really complete transformation, but she really finds the human within the icon. She's just so, you know, heartbreaking and sweet in the quieter moments as well, which is always a good sign of how well someone has become a legend on screen. And I think she more than achieved that. And the HFPA nominating her when she wasn't quite, you know, in that front runner circle, it was a sign that they really were supportive of the performance. We did not predict her to win. It is a shock, but I definitely think it's a signal that people are responding to it. And we've heard the Academy, people who have seen it are really behind the performance. The movie itself, people are not huge fans of, but it's hard to deny how good she is in this one. Would you agree, Joey?
Yes. I think that it's just, it really, like, how naturally and raw she took to this performance is, I think it was a benefit to her for this to sort of be her first movie role, because it feels like she is so untainted by, you know, the expectations of an actress. She just kind of did her own take on this, and it feels very natural, very just lived in. So I think it's just a really raw, gritty performance. And I think that people are really responding to that. So, yeah, I think that she is definitely a legitimate threat right now, but not quite ready to predict her to overtake Carrie just yet, because I think Carrie has the narrative of the themes of the film pushing her as well, whereas Andra, mm-hmm. I don't think has that with this movie because the movie itself has not been so well received. So we'll see how that plays out. It's going to be an interesting race for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. What were some of the other surprises? I mean, I'm top of mind. I'm thinking Jodie Foster and Rosamund Pike. Both of those just really surprised me as I was watching because they have. I mean, we haven't really been talking much about them at all. But can we chat now?
Well, I actually am starting to subscribe to the notion that Rosamund Pike could sneak in and steal Vanessa Kirby's spot. I mean, David and I have been wavering on Vanessa for a few weeks now. Like, do we keep her in? Do we take her out? And I just feel like I Care a Lot came in very strong. It's one of those movies made for this award season, being in the digital era. It succeeded really swiftly and intensely through the digital discourse and went number one on Netflix the day it came out. And I think in an unprecedented race where there is no standard, you have to look at where and what people are talking about in the moment. The moment matters so much more now than it did in years past. And I Care a Lot in Rosamund, it has the momentum right now to knock off a contender who's sort of waning. But Comedy Actress statistically has a very little crossover with the Oscars. So there's that too. But in an unprecedented year, I think you have to go with where the electricity is in the moment. And just like we saw with Andra Day, I think the electricity is with Rosamund right now, especially after last night. So I would not be surprised if she shows up in the fifth nomination slot.
Yeah, it's interesting because you had, I think, what many considered a pretty solid four. In Best Actress, you had Viola Davis, Frances McDormand, Carey Mulligan, and Vanessa Kirby. And Vanessa Kirby, you know, once Ellen Burstyn, who was considered to be a pretty significant contender in supporting actress, started not showing up on major supporting actress lists like the Golden Globes, it became clear that Vanessa's would probably be the only nominee for Pieces of a Woman, which is, you know, a pretty difficult, tough movie. That Netflix acquired. They acquired it for the awards push for Vanessa. It wasn't, you know, a hit by any means. Reviews for the movie were pretty mixed outside of Vanessa's performance. And those are the kinds of performances that really get that early heat, but whose movies just don't stick around, that you really have to look out for that could fall off. I always think of, you know, Timothée Chalamet in Beautiful Boy a couple of years ago, given how great he was in that movie. He showed up everywhere. The movie did not hit otherwise, and he eventually fell off. And I think Joey makes a really interesting point, which is that Rosamund Pike in I Care a Lot is a Netflix movie. It is a new contender. It was a huge hit. I think that's why she won. It hit on Netflix the last weekend of Globes voting, so it was just such perfect timing for her to really surge there. I'm a little more skeptical that she can break through, but I think it opens that fifth slot up in an interesting conversation. I think Andra is that number four now.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to be perhaps surprised, including us, by who takes up that slot. There's a lot of actresses we've talked about sort of fleetingly on the show. And I don't know if any of them would pop up there. I don't know if it would be Vanessa or Rosamund, but it's one where I'm almost expecting to be surprised now.
Yeah. I'm not quite ready to, I'm not ready to put Rosamund in at number five yet. But I think the pathway is there. And I think with this race more than any other race that people, especially Academy voters who don't watch half of these things anyway, in a normal year are going to be looking to things like the Globes to tell them what to vote for and what to look out for. And when you have social media, the internet, sort of swarming around something like I Care a Lot, bolstering the conversation in that way, plus the Golden Globes bolstering the conversation in that way, that is like serving this performance up on a platter to the Academy right before nominations voting. So that's where I think my thought is with this.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it's so interesting how streaming is affecting this race. And I think it's more so. I mean, I'm just remembering last year with Netflix, what the vibe was at the Globes. I mean, David, you remember going to that party after the show, and it was pretty subdued and empty. And this year Netflix was just such a force. And I think it just speaks to the different way that people are receiving their content now, and it's definitely affecting the race. And speaking of Netflix, The other surprise was Jodie Foster in the supporting actress race. But of course, I know all Joey wants to talk about is how this affects Glenn. So let's unpack that. Let's talk about Glenn in Hillbilly Elegy and where she stands considering the Globe's result.
Well, I mean, she'll always stand at number one in my heart with that kitten t-shirt. It's funny because as intensely as I was obsessed with Mama going into this race, my obsession now has sort of turned to Maria Bakalova. I still think Maria is out front. I mean, she went lead at the Globes, which is probably why she didn't win. I was predicting her to win, but I think that not winning here is not going to hurt her. She's still going supporting at the Oscars, and but she hasn't actually challenged any of those contenders in any races yet. So if she loses SAG, then I will be worried. But for now, I'm still on her. I mean, the industry has her top of mind. She got a shout out in Rosamund Pike's speech and in Sacha Baron Cohen's speech. So the people actually in the industry are thinking about her performance in a really big way. So I think that she has actually overtaken Glenn here. I don't know if Glenn ever, I think Glenn was probably the front runner in a lot of our like wishful thinking minds before any of the pieces started falling into place in the season. So I don't know. I think Glenn probably knows that she was never out front. The industry knows Glenn was probably never out front. It'll be a nomination and done for Glenn, I think, this year.
I don't know. I honestly have no idea what is going on in this category.
Yeah.
I really don't. I think whoever SAG picks becomes the front runner just because they're, you know, if Amanda Seyfried won last night, that could have been a kind of a Regina King situation for If Beale Street Could Talk a couple of years ago, where Regina was snubbed by SNAG. She won the Globe and she was able to use that momentum to go all the way. Amanda did not win. She's not nominated at SAG. Nobody has any momentum because Maria did not win the Golden Globe. So I really think whoever wins there gets that sort of default positioning. Mm-hmm. I still think Glenn Close has a shot. I think it would be,
she does.
I think it would be quite fitting if, you know, she won that Globe for The Wife a couple years ago. It was a big shock. She's seated at the back of the room. She takes a half hour to get to the stage. It is this most beautiful speech. And everyone says, how can she not go all the way? And she doesn't. And it would, in this case, I don't think many were expecting her to win the Globe. We didn't predict her to. No. And I didn't really see really anybody predicting her to. But I think that there is a, clearly SAG was behind Hillbilly Elegy. They also nominated Amy Adams. So if Glenn wins there, which I personally would probably predict at this point, we'll see.
Joey's shaking his head. No.
I think when you look at Glenn's trajectory for The Wife, the reason that Glenn did not win at the Oscars is because, I mean, I can't tell you how many of the secret ballots that I did where people were like, I'm not voting for Glenn just because Glenn needs an Oscar.
I remember that.
The performance is great, but the film built around it is the reason why I'm not voting for her. And Hillbilly Elegy was trashed. And
you're right.
I don't think it's trash. It was trashed like
past, by others.
But yes by others. More so than The Wife was. So I think that hurts her. I don't think that SAG voters are going to vote for Glenn to win because what you have to remember that SAG is, the nominating committee is much smaller than the actual voting base who votes on the final award. And I think when you open SAG voting up to the broad membership of SAG, which is thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you're getting a more general or basic taste. And I don't mean basic in a negative sense. I just mean a more baseline sort of taste. And I think that Maria's performance appeals to more of those baseline voters than Glenn's, because that movie was probably seen more than Hillbilly Elegy. I think it's a much easier performance to sort of get behind, and it's a much more physical performance. It's a much more engaging performance in that there's a lot more going on physically. And I think general actors are more prone to voting for something like Maria in a comedic role than Glenn in a supporting role in a film that was not really received that well and also has the stigma of being associated with a conservative political movement. So
yeah, that's true.
I don't think SAG is going to go for Glenn. I really don't.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's move on to the actors. I think in the Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor categories, we weren't very surprised. Chadwick Boseman won for Best Actor Drama and Daniel Kaluuya won for Supporting Actor. What do you all think about that and what it means for the race?
I think Chadwick Boseman is just so assured to win that category now. His surviving wife just gave such an incredible speech, just paying beautiful tribute to him, and also I think capturing the pain of his loss, and just also a graceful speech, you know, recognizing his collaborators in the film. It was just, and even just that ending where she said "keep him coming," it was like, who wouldn't take that message to heart? So I think that sealed the deal. And Daniel Kaluuya, you know, we've been talking about supporting actor as a kind of three-horse race where it wasn't quite clear who was out front. I've always been pretty high on Daniel just because I think when you watch Judas, particularly his speech in that film, he's the guy in this category who has that moment. Sacha Baron Cohen in The Trial of Chicago 7 does not have that moment. I think Leslie Jordan Odom Jr. kind of has that moment in One Night in Miami, and he's great in it, but it doesn't quite match up to that Oscar bait. I mean, to be candid about it, it just really is the kind of performance that wins an Oscar. And I think I wouldn't say Daniel's a lock, unlike Chadwick, but I would say he's pretty comfortably out front.
Right. You know, one thing, I mean, that was brewing, I mean, before the show, there was a lot of controversy around the lack of Black representation in the nominations, and and also a focus on the non-representation in the Hollywood foreign press as well. And I mean, the cynical side of me when I was watching some of these wins, and you guys probably know more about the voting window and whether they were trying to correct some of these things in the winners that they chose, because it just seemed sort of convenient in a way. But am I being cynical, or do you think that had anything to do with how some of the winners played out?
I don't think the bulk of the voting window crossed over with when that controversy was really breaking. So I don't think so. Technically, I don't think it crossed over, but I mean, part of that expose was talking about how the Golden Globes sort of skirt their own rules for a lot of things. So I would not be surprised, but it's a possibility. But I found myself thinking the same thing last night, actually. But yeah, technically, I don't think it actually crossed over.
Honestly, I didn't feel like it did. I mean, we predicted Chadwick and Daniel. Firstly, and Andra Day, that win to me, like, that is a performance that the HFPA would be like, yeah, why not? Yeah. Like that didn't feel out of character to me at all. And I honestly I think if Daniel didn't win, it probably would have been Leslie Odom Jr. anyway, because I don't think they were as high on Trial of Chicago 7 as people thought. And I don't think they would double up on Sasha. So I don't really think that anything changed. Oddly, and we can get into this now, I weirdly think Nomadland may have been played more of a factor there in terms of them picking the cooler, more respected choice. Chloe Zhao winning Best Director, really affirming her hold on that category. I think the Globes, the bad headlines would have come if they gave it to a Trial Chicago 7 or even a Mank going more retro, but they didn't. They stayed the course in terms of recognizing the movie that people are excited about. And that, to me, felt like the more pointed, perhaps politically motivated choice that they made.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, looking ahead, I was surprised a lot last night by some of these winners. It made it actually a little bit more interesting and exciting to me. But what are you all seeing looking ahead as happening? I mean, with the SAG Awards, with Trial of Chicago 7, with Minari. I mean, all of these things got some boost last night. And let me know what you think.
Well, I think that first and foremost, we have to be on the lookout for digital crisis manager Laura Dern stepping in at the Oscars in case anything digital goes haywire. We have digital crisis manager Laura Dern there to keep us back on track. Now, Minari, I think, benefited in the sense that it was absent from a lot of things. I mean, winning Best Foreign Language Film, the only thing that I saw on Twitter last night was people being like, Minari is an American film, so, you know, we should stop calling it foreign, even though technically foreign language is how the Globes classified it. So I think it benefited in that sense, is that the reaction is going to be support Minari like the Globes didn't. So yeah, I think definitely there is where we will see Minari getting a boost. And at SAG, because I think David and I are both expecting Yoon Yu-jung to win, to maybe win supporting actress. So yes, we'll definitely see a big, and maybe even Steven too could, even though we've been saying this whole season that he is in the wrong category, I think that he could come out in best actor.
Yeah. I'm waiting for a Nomadland challenger. I don't think we've seen one yet. Maybe the Trial of the Chicago 7 was going to pop up here. It did not. We had talked about Mank months ago. I think it's fallen off from that perch. And Minari is sort of there, and it's in an interesting place where it's not the kind of movie you would maybe expect to get an ensemble nomination at SAG in the way that perhaps we said about Parasite last year. So if it can pull off one or two wins there, it's a threat. And there may be a movie we're not even thinking about that gets some significant late-breaking industry support. But right now...
Penguin Bloom.
Yes, it's the movie none of us are looking at, and there it is. I just think that I'm waiting to say, okay, this could beat Nomadland, because there's just no evidence that anyone can do that right now. But I think we'll have to wait and see. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Golden Globe winner Andra Day speaks about her role in the United States versus Billie Holiday. Stay with us. Welcome back. Here's our interview with Andra Day, done right before the Golden Globes, but I hope you enjoy nonetheless.
Andra, hello. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited about today.
I am very excited as well. This film moved me deeply, and your performance just pretty much knocked me out. I was really blown away by it. And I have seen some Billie Holiday portrayals, and there are obviously some previous films. This one felt really unique and brought a side to her that I hadn't seen before on screen, which I really appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I love about it is that it brought a truth about her life that I think just society didn't know, period. You know, and I think that was really exciting for me telling the story. And as a fan of hers, that it would be vindicating her legacy. You know, that was something I was really looking forward to.
You had tweeted when the trailer came out that this film changed you. And I was wondering if we could start there. And what about this experience really did have such an effect on you?
It did change me. And it was... it was a really just like paradigm shifting moment for me, or sort of ushering in a new season, I guess, of my life, a new season of me, essentially, you know. And I'm a deeply spiritual person, so I've just sort of been praying a lot about, you know, how to come out of her and how to come out of this experience, and which I feel like I am as of late, even though, you know, now that we finished filming December 9th, 2019, so now, you know, a little over a year later, I feel like I am. But yeah, there's a little bit of a not knowing who I am necessarily in this season, just because I was, partly because I was in her for such a long time. It's been about 3 years of her, you know, so I don't think anyone would be the same after 3 years. But I think when the person you're playing is so big and their impact is so important, and their legacy was truly suppressed, you know, and I think so much in her life, so much victory and so much trauma at the same time, you know, you're changed at a more rapid kind of dramatic pace, you know? So yeah. I don't know, to be honest with you, I'm still finding out who I am in this time, but right now there's still residual Billy, I guess, places around. I don't know, my family's telling me. So yeah, I'm definitely altered, but in a good way. There's a lot of freedom in me. I think that I, and a stronger faith foundation for me that I don't think that I had as much of before playing her.
So that process of taking on someone so big, as you say, how do you even begin there? What did that decision look like for you to say, yeah, I think I can do this?
my decision at first was a hell no for me. I was like, no, I exercise my Fifth Amendment right. So I was like, no, I'm not doing it. I was like, this is a terrible idea. But, and you know, interestingly enough, Lee thought the same thing. He's like, she's a singer. We're not doing this. This is terrible. So like, we were kind of like forced upon each other by our managers who were like, you should look at this script, and his manager, you should look at her. So we sort of sat in the first meeting, like, what are we doing here? Why are we here? I don't think you're going to be good. I don't think I'm going to be good. This is not. So, but we just connected. We connected over her. We connected over our, even our own insecurities, you know, we just connected on life. And I enjoyed him, and I enjoyed his need to tell the truth, because that was a huge thing for me, was that, you know, Diana Ross was phenomenal in Lady Sings the Blues. I don't have a desire to redo Lady Sings the Blues. I don't. And as a fan of Billie Holiday's, I understood that that movie we needed so badly as a people, though it wasn't the full accurate picture of Billie Holiday's life or the government, because the fact that they even told the story back then was amazing, because everyone who went after her and ultimately were responsible for her death, regardless of the drug abuse, they were still alive and they were still in power. We forget about that part, you know what I mean? And even her ex-husband, Louis McKay, who was a technical director on the film, was alive. And, you know, so that was,
yeah,
you know, it was only so much we could do. So I didn't want to remake that because I thought that was just a work of art. But when I found out that it would be talking about how Harry J. Anslinger, J. Edgar Hoover, the FBN and the FBI, how they all came down on her and went after her under the guise of a war on drugs. But really it was because she was singing Strange Fruit. She was talking about racial terror in America. When I found that out, that was more motivating for me. And then also from a spiritual perspective, as I said, I'm deeply spiritual. I had a peace, even though I was like, no, I don't want to do this. I had a real peace about, like, I think I'm supposed to. And so he connected me with Tasha Smith, who was my incredible acting coach, who was just an amazing actress, an amazing coach, an amazing director. You know, she just, and she really cared about my performance and my success and in this role, and she poured into me and really helped me to learn how to use my emotions in a way that was not just great for the role, but has taught me a lot even in life. So that she was a huge part of that. Tom Jones was my dialect coach. They would just not quit on me at all. So it was amazing.
What was the road to getting the dialect right and the really particular aspects of her character right as you or got deeper and deeper into it with them?
Yeah, a lot of self-maiming.
as it goes.
It was the acting part of it with Tasha. You know, I mean, I don't know how this woman was able to do it, but, and I am, I mean, I'm, you know, I always joke about, I'm a Capricorn. So we are researchers. We need every detail. We are hard workers, you know what I mean? And they all were hard workers as well. So I think just the combination again of her commitment and her hard work and my hard work and his as well. I mean, learning how to sort of bring up emotions, and actually one of the big things was even dealing with familial trauma, right? We all have a bit of it, but we all, in order to be healthy and to move on, we compartmentalize and we figure out ways to not deal with them anymore, or to just to move on, to face it. For me, face it and I pray about it and I move on from it. So with this, it was sort of like, oh, no, hold on to it and live in it for months at a time. You know what I mean? Or for, you know, 3 years at a time. So, and how to even use my fear and my hesitation. It was beyond hesitation. I didn't want to do it. To use my fear about this role to inform the character. Because, you know, some, one of the things she would tell me, she's like, what do you think Billie feels every time she gets on that stage? Every time she, you know, and so she needed people to love her. It was like, to know that I'm worthy. And I totally understand that feeling. So we used a lot of that with the voice. It was researching every book, every interview, every song. I knew a lot of her music anyway, because I was such a huge fan. But every interview we could get our hands on, anytime she was making a side or a song and she would break off and say she messed up. And, you know, I got that one. I'll pay for that one. Everything. I mean, we exhausted the internet and books and about her, and with the voice, the way I was really able to enter through her was obviously the singing voice as well too, but also her laugh. She had such a, like, identifiable laugh. It was like a pinging, you know, sort of come back and hit against something. And so we used that and her breath. And physically, I was rough on my voice. I'm not a cigarette smoker, but I started smoking cigarettes for the last, I guess, year or two. Smoking cigarettes. I don't drink alcohol, but I drink alcohol. You know, not doing warm things for my voice. No tea, just cold water, gin. I don't drink either. So being loud all the time. I mean, anything I would do to take care of my voice as a singer, I did the opposite because I think the gravel and the grit in her voice is so much a part of her person and her character. So it would be, I think we would be remiss not to go after that. And we did, and I'm really happy with how it came out.
The movie is so much about really the power of her songs in terms of what they say, but also what they say about her, particularly her character and her strength. I'm not sure what you perform first or film first, but I'm wondering after years of this prep, what it was like for you to be in that, in her costume and performing her, like finally reaching that moment. Can you maybe walk me through that first time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing, that we sang was Ain't Nobody's Business, was her Carnegie Hall performance. So I think that was the first performance that we filmed, and we did it like 800 million times. This was also a lesson in filmmaking for me, you know, because as a singer, you're used to, you get on stage and you perform and everybody's like, yay, and you're like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, now let's do it again. I'm like, huh? Now let's turn around and do it again, huh? And I was like, oh, okay. So it was all just like a lesson for me, but it was terrifying. Honestly, I got more comfortable as far as with my cast, with Lee, just being able to trust these people that they really cared about this being successful. But I never got actually comfortable. I never, you know, I was terrified the entire time. And every day was the day I'd be awful and they'd realize it. And then I'd be sent home. You know what I mean? So it was like, I was terrified, but also it felt really good. It felt good. I enjoyed having her in there. I enjoyed our commingling of spirits. And I always tell people at the beginning of this, I asked, my acting coach says, check into the Billie Holiday dream, but I asked God for her. I put her in here, you know, everywhere. And it felt good. I think it felt really good to feel her, but it was also nerve wracking because, you know, I don't have the experience. So I didn't want to be terrible, you know, but I could feel the need for people. My need was obviously for people on set, you know, to first of all, to know her truth, to know her story, the grander audience, but also for people on set to be like, I have got to be good enough. I cannot be terrible. And so, I didn't know. It's like I said, I was terrified, but it also just, it felt great. It felt great to be her in a way that was really, really, really hard for me to let her go at the end of filming.
Did getting into her look help you as well? It's such a particularly iconic look. I feel like that Billie Holiday glam almost.
Absolutely. The flower. It's like as soon as the flower went on, that was sort of like the cape. It was like, you know what I mean? So yeah. I was like, as soon as that went on, and working with Paolo Nieto on like costumes and design, you know, Prada doing the dresses, it was that part for me, because I already consider myself a bit of a like vintage kind of squirrel. You know, I love period. I love, you know, music from that period. I love fashion and, you know, cinema. And so it was like a very full circle moment, you know? And so it was weird because putting on the vintage clothes, I felt kind of like myself and very much like her, you know? So it's, it felt like home a little bit, but like a crazier home, you know? So, and Paolo put so much detail, Paolo and Fisher put so much detail into every piece. I mean, he's on set stressing about one cufflink on an extra, you know what I mean? So he just was one of those people, one of those like people that I just love, that care about every detail, that works so hard. And so we had an amazing text thread going on just about different things. And I would talk about her African lady earrings. He's like, oh, I know, I got them. And so it was perfect. Or these glasses that she loved, her fur and her, because the thing is, her fashion was very much a part of her activism, you know? And I don't think people know that, is that it was offensive, really, for the mainstream America at that time, for her to be a Black woman wearing a fur coat, wearing diamond mm-hmm. earrings, wearing, you know. So, you know, it was a part of that that was just fun and just enjoyable and dropped me into her character. And then it was a part of that was almost like armor. That's her fight. You know what I mean? It's, yes, she should be free to wear what she wants to if she can afford it, or if, you know, they want to give it to her. So it was hugely a part of it.
One of the things I really love about this movie is how interesting it is in Billie Holiday as a person, as a human being backstage, how she talks to people, how she sits. Mm-hmm. It felt so detailed. I really appreciated that. And I'm wondering if you came across particular things in your research.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so that's what I love about her the most as well, too. You know, it's why I enjoy reading Lady Sings the Blues so much, her autobiography, because it's a right. look into her character or the way she thinks and how she'll pivot. Like, one of my favorite things in the book is when she talks about, for all my crummy times in the South, about all the terrible venues down in the South, da da da. She said, but the one best one was the Fox Theater in Detroit. And we're like, oh no, that's not the South, lady. Like, you know, or she'll go from talking about a crazy story to being like, you know, Lester just loved my mother's cooking. Like, wait a minute, are we in the South being discriminated against, or are we at home eating your mama's cooking with Lester? I love that, because as an artist, I feel that, you know. So I think the thing that struck me so much, you know, first of all, was just, I think, just how she was so magnetic. One of my favorite books is a book called With Billy, which we actually get a touch of Jimmy Fletcher in that book, which is amazing. And you get to, you know, Stump Daddy is one of the characters in there that she just randomly met, and they hop in a cab together, and he's a musician as well, too. But her experiences with strangers, with just random people, was what I loved about her and what struck me the most. Billie really had a way of allowing people to be who they were in that moment, in that season, and accepting them and loving them in that place. You know what I mean? And I think as people, we have such high expectations, or just unrealistic expectations for each other all the time, as opposed to being able to experience each other, you know what I mean? And allowing ourselves to be blessed by whoever that person is in this moment, in this season. So she did that. And I think that's what people loved about her. And that's what struck me so much about her. You know, she just, it was never, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you shouldn't. It was just sort of, cool, you're here, I'm here, let's do our thing. You know what I mean? And that is, she was really, really special in that way. And I think that's part of why she was so beloved, you know?
What was it like for you to perform Strange Fruit, because it's so central to the movie? And to be honest, I can't remember the last time I've seen a movie where the song was so important to so many aspects of it, you know, yeah. to your character, to the message of the film, to the conflict of the film. I mean, it's such a powerful statement every time you get on that stage and perform it.
Yeah. First of all, it absolutely was, and it is, you know, right? It's a song that is central yeah. and powerful to right now, to every era mm-hmm. in America, until we actually excavate and tell the truth about our history and the fabric. You know, it's unfortunately still relevant, you know, and will be until we face that. But performing it was, it was traumatic and healing at the same time. You know, it was... Yeah. I was joking. I was just in a conversation with Lee and SOP. I was saying it might have been the moment I decided to retire from acting after my first role. I was like, Strange Fruit retired me. It's like, you know, it just, I said it was, I had to pull on a lot of, obviously, social trauma, right? I'm a Black woman living in America, and that has its own set of traumas. And, but I think what grabbed me the most and what stuck out to me the most was that I had to pull, in addition to how painful the lynching is and seeing that happen to my people constantly in society, I had to pull from personal pain and personal trauma as well in order to fully realize the emotion of this moment. And that, in a way, bothered me. You know, it didn't in the sense that you have to do what you have to do to get the performance. But it bothered me that that wasn't enough. A lynching is a horrific, horrific yeah. sight. It's a horrific idea, and it is very much at the fabric of American culture. There is an dark underbelly of racial terror, you know. And that should have been enough. The fact that I had to pull on familial trauma made me go, yeah, this is too normal for us. It bothered me how desensitized and how normalized it has been for my community to experience tragedy and loss. You know what I mean? And hate crimes and terrorism orchestrated against us, no matter what we're doing, whether we're following the law, breaking the law, you know, it's very clear that none of that really matters. And it still has to do with who we are as a people. So it bothered me. And that sat in my spirit for quite some time that, you know, it should have been enough, this tragedy, but we're very, very familiar with it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And facing that was able, the part where it helped me to heal from it and say, no, this does bother me and I need it to not. I need to be very sensitive to this again. You know what I mean?
You mentioned struggling really to let Billy go. But before we end this, I did want to see for you what it was like to leave the character behind at first, you know, those last days of filming and what that was like.
Well, honestly, for starters, she's not fully gone. I don't think, and maybe there's mm-hmm. parts of her that will always be with me. I don't know. Maybe she helps to color and inform who I believe God wants me to be in this season. But coming off of set was, it felt impossible, to be honest with you. You know, it felt impossible because people would say, well, now you can get back to being you, you know. And I hated thinking about it because I didn't know who upon thinking about it, I realized I didn't know who I was. And the other part was, even with my castmates, they were so sweet and they were like, well, you know, you're so great. You're so cool. You know what I mean? We'll definitely stay in touch with it. But I'm like, but I felt weird being like, but I don't, this is not me. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't think that that's the person who's going to be there or is going to show up. I don't know. I loved her. I love her. I loved having her in me. I loved being in her. I loved what God did through this film, I believe. And when I, you know, what's funny, when I came back, everything just felt very, very normal. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Everything here just felt very normal and very much the same, which is probably what I needed, I think, maybe, you know. But it just felt like there's just sort of, like I said, this paradigm shifting quake happening underneath my feet. And it felt like everything and everyone was just, there's no urgency. Everything felt very, you know, that was just the immediate feeling when I got back, you know. Now I've settled, obviously, into normalcy better. But I don't know. I think it's just so much energy and so much power from a person sort of surging through you for such a long period of time. You're changed. You know what I mean? So it was really difficult, definitely, to let her go, to let my cast go. You know, I really loved them. I do love them, you know, and Lee. And so it's just, I don't know. There's a moment. I'm one of those people, though. I'm like a typical Capricorn. I'm just like, no, I don't want it to end. You know what I mean? It's just like probably just me being like hella dramatic or some shit like that. I don't know. But yeah.
It's a big role, though. And I can imagine it is hard to shake.
Yeah, it definitely, definitely has been. Cigarettes had to go, though, for sure.
Probably for the best. Well, the film is The United States vs. Billie Holiday, streaming on Hulu. Andra Day, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Experts make mistakes, even the awardist. So we're tracking our own progress on this chaotic awards journey by admitting what we're wrong about in our predictions and gloating about what we're right about. This week, we're putting David and Joey back on the spot with last night's Golden Globe Awards. Guys, what were you right about and what were you wrong about?
Joey?
I mean, I'm right about everything 100% of the time.
Me too. That's why we do this segment.
I actually don't know, outside of the expected contenders, if I was necessarily like right about anything that nobody else was predicting. I don't know how you feel about that, David.
I noticed most people predicting The Trial of the Chicago 7 for Best Picture. And to me, it always made sense that the Globes would go for Nomadland because, first of all, they gave it a screenplay nomination. And that just, like, it's not the kind of movie where the Globes would feel obligated to give it a screenplay nomination if they weren't behind it, especially because mm-hmm. they combine original and adapted. So that was a big tell for me. And also, this is the group they gave it to, The Social Network. They gave it to Boyhood. They like to anoint that early cool frontrunner, even if they peter out, which I don't think Nomadland will. Those movies, of course, did. So that I felt confident about, and I'm glad it came through. In terms of what I was wrong about, I mean, I think everybody was wrong about Carey Mulligan, but I also felt like Promising Young Woman would break through in screenplay. Emerald Fennell was a writer-director they clearly were pretty passionate about, giving her both writing and directing nominations. And I felt like she would pull it off there. That is where The Trial of the Chicago 7 won. So that was a little bum to see that, and I was wrong in that it did not win there.
Mm-hmm. I think I was wrong on an even bigger thing, because you were sort of pushing me to predict Daniel. I didn't want to predict Daniel. Mm-hmm. So I was just convinced that he didn't have enough support yet, but I was very wrong on that. So yeah, you were very, very right on pushing us to predict Daniel.
Thanks, right,
who did you want, Joey? Who did you think it was going to be?
I mean, I think if we're talking about who I wanted, I definitely, out of this five, would have wanted Daniel. I mean, that's, I think personal preference is obviously way different than who you're predicting. But I was predicting Sasha, wasn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the goodwill he had.
I think you flipped to Leslie at the end.
Oh, yes. I did flip to Leslie because I felt like One Night in Miami was going to win something because the HFPA are such star, well, I almost said the word star lovers.
Star lovers.
I figured they would want to give Regina's film something. I actually was almost getting ready to predict her for Best Director, but I thought maybe they'll give it to Leslie and supporting, but yeah. No, I was wrong.
I think sometimes that's the benefits of a small voting body, where maybe, you know, Daniel, that movie has been slow to pick up steam because it debuted so late. But when you only have 90 or so voters, you can, if the performance is there and they're ready to get behind it, you have the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good example of that for sure.
Penguin Bloom still has a chance. Retroactively give it Best Picture with the Globes. We just have to write all 87 members.
And on that note,
leave it on that. Well, that's all from us today. Thanks for joining us on this episode of The Awardist, and thanks to Joey, as always, for his analysis and expertise and Penguin Bloom love. Mm-hmm. Please subscribe and listen along every week wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, tell us what you think, share it with your friends. You can also head to ew.com/awardists for complete coverage of this year's Oscar race. And follow me on Twitter at ClarissaNYC1, David at DavidCanfield97, and Joey at JoeyNolfi. Amanda Seyfried joins us next week to discuss her role in Mank, and we'll come armed with our final predictions for this year's Oscar nominations. Mm. Thanks for listening. This has been The Awardist.